UFP, the United Federation of Podcasts.
Welcome to Franchise Fatigue, the little podcast on the United Federation of Podcast Network, where your hosts go through movies, remakes, and sequels. I'm your host, Brandon Shamutella, and joining me, as always, is my ever-constant co-host, Zach Moore.
Hello, Zach Moore.
Do you like scary movies?
Do you like scary movies? What's your favorite scary movie?
I think... That's the line, like, you know, all these lines in movies are famously misquoted forever.
Mm-hmm.
Now that I've seen Scream, because I've never seen any of these
nuts. That is just insane.
No one says that in the movie. Like, they say scary movie a lot, yeah. And he talks about scary movies, but no one says, like, do you like scary movies? Like, when somebody quotes Scream, that's what they say. And it's not in the movie.
He says, what's your favorite scary movie, doesn't he?
Right. But yeah. That's when somebody, you're at a party and you're trying to act like it, you pick up the phone, you're being silly. That's what people say.
I'm your father, one of the, Luke.
Luke, I am your father, you know, et cetera, et cetera. So, but hey, Scream, right?
Yeah, we're getting here. I can't believe you haven't seen this. This is crazy.
Well, I was still in elementary school when mm-hmm. these were coming out. So I was a little too young for these. So I kind of missed the first wave.
Mm-hmm.
And then by the time I was like old enough to check this stuff out, I was like, oh, well, that's like the fourth one now. Who cares? And I will say it is a strange. I don't know if it's the same mask or not, but the scary movies,
yeah,
using the same exact villain, and I have seen those, and so it's interesting to watch this.
Yes.
Now having seen that, plus the tone of the movie too is like it's hard to adjust to, like, oh, this is your killer, but the movie is kind of self-aware about that. We'll talk about it.
Yeah.
But but anyway, it's a phenomenon for sure. So I just missed out on it.
Yeah. I didn't see this on in theaters, the first one. I caught it on VHS later. And I know that it was one of the first widescreen VHSs that I owned. Yeah, I had it on widescreen VHS. But I did catch the other three in theaters and intend to go for... I intend to see Scream in the theaters. I don't think it's called Scream 5. You know what, Zach? I'm sick and tired of these movies using the same name as the first movie. Like, stop this, people. Come on. This is dumb. I don't like it.
Brandon, people will be confused.
Why? How could they be confused if they called it Scream 5?
Scream Reborn. Scream Returns.
Scream Resurrections.
Requiem. There's so many. The Thing Begins.
They've just been Scream, Scream 2, Scream 3, Scream 4, and Scream? Come on.
Well, it's Halloween, The Thing. We talk about it. It's just, I don't understand. You could just put a subtitle on it. Because then, I understand if it's a remake, obviously. I mean, we talk about those on here, right?
Yeah.
But when it's a sequel,
yeah,
you can't call it the same thing. That doesn't make any sense.
But people
are going to be confused.
Even Star Trek 09, it's called Star Trek, but nobody calls it Star Trek. They always call it Star Trek 09, right? Nobody calls it just Star Trek, because if you say, have you seen Star Trek, they'd be like, which one?
Which one?
Right?
Yeah.
Even though 09. The first one is called... Nobody
Star
calls the
Trek
first
the motion picture.
They just call it the motion picture, though, right?
They knew they had to call it something different. Yeah. So I don't know what it is. We talked about Halloween Kills, where it's like, well, this is... Yeah, in the first one. And by the first one, I mean
the second one.
The direct sequel to the first original, which ignores all the other Halloween 2s.
Yeah.
So, man, franchises are dumb, Brandon.
Stupid.
I don't know why we waste so much time talking about them. Movies are the worst.
F this podcast.
All right, well, that's going to do it.
Excellent. But
that's what killed it. Scream 5's title.
That's
what killed the podcast.
Well, we might as well record this one. I mean, we watched the movie anyways, right? We might as well talk about this
one. That's true. Okay. We'll finish it off.
And I just, you know, spoilers for everybody listening to the podcast. I know that Zach is a very, very famous podcaster, but he's actually going to die at the end of the trivia. And he won't be around for the rest of the podcast. So I know that
Brandon,
he's on the
just
cover.
Like Psycho.
I know he's on the cover and whatnot of the podcast, but he's going to be dead. We just got him in for the shock value of his death. So, anyways, take it away, Zach.
Well, that leads nicely into some trivia we have for Scream here, Brandon, because originally Drew Barrymore was cast as Sydney. But Drew Barrymore said that if she played Casey, then it would make the audience think that anything could happen. So that was apparently her suggestion.
Weird.
And she only filmed for 5 days. Maybe that was part of it, too. She's like, okay, well, I can just stay here for a week and get paid pretty good. Because this really is, you know, she probably is the biggest name in the at the time, right? In the mid-90s? I mean, Courtney Cox.
Courtney Cox. David Arquette, man. Friends. I mean, come on.
David Arquette. For a second, I was like, is that Luke Wilson? But it is David Arquette. So anyway, and I think that was kind of a psycho kind of twist to it, right? To have the big famous actress be centerpiece, all the trailers for her, right? All this stuff, and then she's gone. You're like, oh wow, no one is safe.
Yeah.
So, you know, I mentioned the Scary Movie franchise. So the original title for Scream was Scary Movie, which ironically was, you know, used as the parody franchise of this. And that's perhaps why the term quote unquote scary movie is used many times in the film. Mm-hmm. So that's probably some self-referential stuff for a film that is extremely self-referential.
I haven't seen any of those Scary Movie movies.
None. They get progressively worse, as you can imagine, but some of them are clever. And just watch the trailers. I think all the best stuff, honestly, is in the trailers. So.
For all those?
Those really got off the rails. Like, Scary Movie, then they made, like, Disaster Movie and Epic Movie. It's like, guys, just stop. Just stop. These are the same guys. I believe it was the Zucker Brothers who made Airplane and all these great parodies, right? But kind of ran out of steam in the 2000s. So
okay, I didn't know that they would have done that. That's great. That's interesting.
So other directors were considered before Wes Craven, but they didn't work out because they all viewed the script as a comedy. And Wes Craven understood the balance of what this was supposed to be. So he initially turned down the film, though, himself, because he was already busy developing a remake of The Haunting and wanted to distance himself from the horror genre. Because he's the Nightmare on Elm Street guy, right? That's Wes Craven, right?
Mm-hmm.
But he signed on to direct after Drew Barrymore signed on to the film. So there you have that. And also, there's a story that goes this way. Like, he was confronted by a fan, like about a 10-year-old fan, and this kid accused him of going soft and that he had more guts back in the day when he was making movies like Last House on the Left. So that pushed him over the edge, and he called the people at Miramax, and they agreed to do Scream.
That's funny. So 10-year-old said,
I'll show that kid.
10-year-old wanted more Last House on the Left, the movie where the girl's raped and murdered, and then the people end up in the house of that girl. Wow.
I have some parenting questions about that household. So anyway. Wes Craven had seen Neve Campbell in Party of Five, which was another... I mean, she was a huge name at the time, TV shows and stuff. So Party of Five was a big 90s show, and he asked her to audition for the part because he thought she could portray a character who was innocent but also realistically could handle herself when dealing with the physical conflict and emotions of the role. It was pretty, you know, it's a heavy part. You got to go through a lot when you're playing Sydney.
Mm-hmm. Zach, can I tell you something?
You can.
I had the biggest crush on Neve Campbell.
I understand. Yeah. I get it. Even me not seeing the movie is like, who's that? So Rose McGowan, who it took me a while to recognize being in the movie too, I'm like, she looks familiar. So I got an idea. I'm like, oh, it's Rose McGowan. She dyed her hair blonde to contrast Neve Campbell's dark hair. So it wouldn't just be a bunch of dark-haired people running around. It was effective because I could barely recognize her. I don't think I've ever seen Rose McGowan as blonde hair before. And she was, you know, Charmed, you know? Maybe Charmed was after this. But these are, you know, I say Drew Barrymore was the biggest name. From movies, she was. But from TV shows, there are a lot of these actors that you'd see in the 90s. Now, I thought this
was my goodness, I looked her up. That's her from Planet Terror. Holy smokes.
Yeah, Planet Terror, man. Robert Rodriguez.
Wow. So,
I used to get her and Alyssa Milano confused, but they are, I think they're both on Charmed, or were, mm-hmm. back in the day. So Skeet Ulrich has said that he had no idea that this was a horror comedy for most of the shoot. He just thought it was a horror movie, straight up. And, you know, he had probably the most serious role in there. And then Matthew Lillard, who, spoilers, is the other killer. We'll just jump into it here, right? But he's mostly, like, extreme comic relief until the very end. And then he would say these ridiculous lines, and then Skeet Ulrich would ask Wes Craven, like, why is he acting this way? Why is Jamie Kennedy acting so over the top? And then Craven had to remind him, like, this is partly a comedy and partly a satire. It's not a straight horror movie. Mm-hmm. So it's like, bro, what do you, did you read the script? Do you see? Yeah,
self-aware comedy, yes.
It probably works, though, because he does seem like you could take him out of this movie and put him in any horror movie, and he would work, that character. So, now, Courtney Cox, again, you know, television, right?
Mm-hmm.
Courtney Cox had approached the production because she wanted to play, quote-unquote, a bitch character.
Ooh.
Because she was such a, quote-unquote, nice character on Friends, and she wanted to kind of show she had some range, right? But they kept turning her down. They're like, no, you're Monica from Friends, you know? Like, the people aren't going to buy you. But she kept lobbying the studio, and ultimately she got the part. And I think she was really successful in it.
I agree.
It was interesting to see Monica. I think Monica from Friends is like this hard-nosed reporter, kind of sleazy, you know, when she needs to be. But she has a lot of facets in this character. And it's interesting, back in the 90s, you know, they were talking about making new Superman movies, and they never did. But it was always Demi Moore or Courtney Cox, so they wanted to play Lois Lane.
Okay.
So I was like, oh, I could see that, especially with her playing a reporter here, a different kind of reporter. But anyway, that's where my mind went.
Not Rose McGowan?
Not Rose McGowan, no.
I just
Dev Campbell is Lois Lane. That'd be great.
Oh, there you go, yeah. I just can't believe that David Arquette and Courtney Cox are married.
Because of this movie, I assume? Is they met?
That's like insane.
So. They You saw the love story happen on screen in real time.
Sure.
Dewey.
I guess
still
so.
Got it.
Yeah.
So Jamie Kennedy was chosen because he would also often improvise humor into his lines, and that made Wes Craven laugh. Mm-hmm. So that's a big reason he was cast. And also, and, you know, I mentioned Matthew Lillard before. A lot of the lines in the climax are ad-libbed by him. Like the whole line where he's like, did you really call the cops? My mom and dad are going to be so mad at me. Apparently, Wes Craven thought that was really funny, so he kept it in the film. And also the whole death moment where Sydney kills him, where he's like, I always had a thing for you, Sid. And she says, in your dreams, before she kills him with the TV. That was all ad-libbed by both of them. Mm. So it's interesting. I mean, this is a very clever script, but it's interesting that they still had the confidence to throw in some ad libs in there, because that's great stuff there. That's great stuff.
Absolutely.
Also, Sheriff Burke was played by Joseph Whipp. A couple things about him: he wears the same boots as Goatface. We see that when he puts out his cigarette, and that was to kind of, again, like you're watching the movie, like so many people could potentially be Ghostface.
Right.
So that was a really cool red herring. But also, he is from the Nightmare on Elm Street movies. He played a cop.
Mm-hmm.
So the backstory, like the headcanon of this guy, Kevin Williamson, the writer of the movie, he said, so the backstory I put in is that he was so upset by the events of Nightmare on Elm Street that he moved to a small town in Northern California. So theoretically, that's the same
guy.
The
same, it's all
character,
connected.
If you want to see it that way, right?
Is he's not the dog face boy from Humbug X-Files, is he?
Oh, is he?
I don't know.
Look it up. I'm going to keep talking. You look it up. I thought he looked really familiar. He really may have been.
Okay, let me look it up. X-Files Humbug.
Now, speaking of Kevin Williamson, the writer, he listened to the soundtrack for Halloween while writing the script. And that was, you know, makes sense because Halloween appears in the movie. Fortunately, Miramax owned it at the time, so that like, made some sense. The franchise is crossing over. But speaking of the score, there are some excerpts from the Halloween soundtrack that obviously appear in the score. And Marco Beltrami, our friend from Terminator 3, Rise of the Machines, he decided to disregard conventional horror scores and approach it as a Western, taking influence from Ennio Morricone.
Okay, it's not him.
It's not him.
No,
okay.
The guy who played the dog face boy was Wayne Grace.
So
I love this score. I love this score for this movie.
I was going to ask you about it because it took me a while to kind of get in. I was like, this doesn't feel like it matches what we're seeing, but I guess that's kind of the point, right?
Yeah, I totally love the score for this. I've always loved it since the beginning. I've got the scores from Beltrami on CD. But like, not only that, though, I love the soundtrack to this movie. Like, the Scream soundtrack is like a staple of my youth. Like, with you know,
music
Bird
inspired
Brain,
by from the motion picture,
Youth of America. You know, Red Right Hand, which I'd already known at this point from Dwayne
the
Barry.
X-Files. Yeah,
everybody, all my friends were like into this. I'm like, I've known this song for years, right? Because I had songs in the key of X. So, but like all these songs on here, I just loved this album so much. But Beltrami's music was so original, you know, like with that haunting kind of choir sound mixed with those like electronic sounds. Oh man, I just love this score. I think it's really, really great.
No, it's good. It took me a while to get on board with it, but when I did, I was like, okay, I see what they're going for here. Mm-hmm. Now, let's talk about Ghostface Mask, all right? Some trivia here about this. So the Ghostface Mask was originally developed for novelty stores in the early 90s by Fun World. But it's part of a series called Fantastic Faces, and the mask itself is known as the Peanut-Eyed Ghost. Okay. Now, the final design was approved by Fun World president Alan Giller, and Wes Craven claimed to have originally found the mask, but later clarified that he had misremembered the event, and that was producer Marianne Madonella who had discovered it. She found it while inside a house during location scouting for the film and brought it to the attention of Wes Craven, who set about getting the rights for it. So Fun World Licensing was given the task to naming the mask prior to its debut and decided on Ghost Face with the blessing of Fun World owners because they felt it looked like a ghost in pain and thought it was a unique design. So that design and title are still owned by Fun World. But interestingly, in the movie, right, because they find the costume in the movie, like, oh, we can't trace back. There's so many of these costumes, right? It's called Father Death when they bring it in, when Dewey has the copy of the costume in the movie. Okay. So,
you sure this wasn't Connell Cochran didn't make this mask?
This is not a Silver Shamrock mask.
It's not a Silver Shamrock mask. Okay, no. Good. Okay.
And a couple other things about Ghostface. So, beyond the mask, originally his black robe was going to be white to make him appear even more like a ghost. But there was concern that it would look too much like a KKK member, Ku Klux Klan. They're like, all right, let's get away from that and let's go with black. So
I think again, the black would be better anyways, though.
Always bet on black. That's what I say. So, and then the voice, the famous voice on the phones, right? So Roger Jackson is the voiceover artist. And originally, that voice was only to be used as a placeholder, and then we're going to dub over it in post-production. But they decided to use Jackson's voice because they thought it was perfect, and they kept it because it sounded intelligent and evil, according to Wes Craven, and became such a staple of the franchise. So that's what's so interesting because they're actually, you know, it's like the guy reading lines to you on set. That's who they're talking to, and they kept the voice. So that's really cool, I think.
That is neat. Yeah, because it is perfect. It is a great voice.
And it's really weird at the end when they're talking to the voice changer. You hear the voice through the
other people. You're like, wait a minute, why didn't we hear that before? What's going on here?
Right.
Hold your horses.
Now, during the opening scene with Drew Barrymore, at one point, they forgot to unplug the phone that Casey used to try and call the cops. So she actually called 911.
Ooh.
And then, you know, the operators were like, why is this woman screaming? They had to, like, explain to the authorities what was going on there.
That's so funny. That sounds like an urban legend.
Yeah, well, I have to see if to go some more, do some more research on that. That may or may not be true. Now, I got some Henry Winkler trivia, because the Fonz is in this. That surprised me. I was like, why is the Fonz in this? Good for the Fonz, right? I met the Fonz once. He was on the talk show that I worked on.
Oh, nice.
Back in the day, so nice guy. So, when he turns and scares himself in the mirror after answering the door, he starts to fix his hair.
Mm-hmm.
Like Fonzie did on Happy Days. Also, when he opens his closet, you see Fonzie's leather jacket in there. I saw that immediately. I was like, oh, that is totally Fonzie's leather jacket. That's well done. That's some other headcanon. The Fonz became a high school principal after that, right? And then apparently he was killed because the producers thought that the movie was going too long without a murder. So they're like, kill the principal. So because that seemed the most random one of the kills. But anyway... And also, there's a scene that was filmed but not included in the final cut of Sydney going to the principal and telling him about the attack that she had in the bathroom.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's what ultimately leads to them to suspend school and shut it down and dismiss the students. So that would have been some connective tissue there. I probably should have left that in because I was like, oh, they're just shutting.
Yeah, that seems like rather abrupt after one murder.
I was like, did I miss something? But anyway. Now
that's
the
why
only
they killed
scene,
the principal because he shut down the school.
But why? That's a good thing when you're a kid.
Yeah, but they want to learn. Anyway, they want to learn.
Now the only scene where one of the actors who played the characters who played the killer is in the costume instead of a stunt person is when Ghostface is sneaking up behind Randy. That's Jamie Kennedy. So Skeet Ulrich specifically asked if he could do it because he wanted to wear the costume for at least one scene. Okay. And there's like a, that's like a double meta scene there because Jamie Kennedy is talking to Jamie Lee Curtis on the screen. He's like, come on, Jamie, turn around. And I'm like, you're talking about yourself. So very meta in that way. Now, for the killer's motives, the writer Kevin Williamson felt it was essential for the audience to learn why they became the killers, but also felt it was scarier if they had no motivation. So they were kind of torn on what they needed to do. So since there were two killers, they did both, right? They gave Billy, had the maternal abandonment issues. Mm-hmm. Billy Loomis, by the way.
Yep.
You know, Sam Dr. Loomis. Yep. So, yeah. And the second killer, Stu, he jokingly suggests peer pressure, but he was just crazy.
Yeah.
That guy was just off the chain. So, and to that point, Kevin Williamson has said that Matthew Lillard, the actor, brought so much of that character because he was kind of an underwritten character, more comic relief than anything else.
He was amazing.
So, yeah, he was. And then, you know, he goes on to play Shaggy in Scooby-Doo, yep. Which is, I was like, it's Shaggy.
He's absolutely amazing in this movie. Like, seriously, he is one of the standout performances in this film because his character is just, his off-the-wall humor is so perfect. And, like, when you watch it on rewatches and stuff, right?
You can see that guy as Ghostface.
Yeah, you can see it.
Yeah, it's huge, yeah.
But not only that, like, you know, with that weird humor and whatnot, the scene at the beginning when they're talking about the first murder and, like, how could you gut somebody, like... Mm-hmm. When you know that they're the murderers, that whole scene plays completely differently, you know?
I am looking forward to rewatching this now, knowing though, because I was like, I really did, I went out of my way not to spoil myself about this, because I know there's so many characters, and I was like, am I going to figure it out? I'm like, no, actually, they did a really good job, you know, fighting around. But a couple last notes then, and we'll jump into it. But Wes Craven, speaking of the way Ghostface acts, like, he knew they were walking a fine line with how clumsy he is, right? So sometimes they shot even more stuff, like in the first fight with Sydney, where she beats him over the head with a picture and he falls down the stairs and stuff like that. They're like, it's getting too slapsticky, so they tone back on that, but this being a horror comedy is like, that kind of works. Like, it's nice that he's not just some unstoppable Michael Myers force. He's actually like, you hear him like and stuff sometimes. Mm-hmm. So I thought that was fun. And then finally, Wes Craven, of course, creator of Nightmare on Elm Street. We have the line in here where they say the first Nightmare on Elm Street is great, but the rest suck. He thought about cutting that because he thought it would make him look like an egomaniac, but he left it in, and I'm glad he did. So,
yeah, because he would have made number 7 by then too. Hey, like Wes Craven's New Nightmare, he would have made that.
But
by
New
then.
Nightmare is like the best one, man. I really like New Nightmare, but I'm not the horror guy.
I don't know if it's the best one, but it's really good. It's really
fresh.
Good.
It's up there. Yeah, you know?
It's
so really anyway. Good.
That special effects when Freddy stretches his mouth in that final scene is pretty sketchy, right?
Like, it was the late 90s. They didn't know. Yeah. Anyway.
Excellent. Okay, well, good job on the trivia there. Thank you very much. You're dead now, okay? And so I'll just do the rest of this podcast by myself.
Oh, that's right. I've been killed off.
Yes.
What a shock.
What a shock. Twist. I love this movie, okay? So, like, from the first time I saw it, you know, when I was a kid, I love murder mysteries. And I love a good murder mystery, and it's fun to watch a movie and try and figure out who's the murderer. You know, I think most people have fun with it, unless you've got something against murder in general, which is fine. I'm sure there's people who are. People like doing that. They like trying to figure out who the murderer is. And, you know, the way they talk about it in this film, where they're like, everybody's a suspect, Wes Craven did a wonderful job of actually showing how everybody could have been, you know, like, even, you know, at the principal at one point, when the principal put the mask on, I'm like, oh my goodness, is it him? You know,
and right? Then even those little things, I was really, because like you look like a CSI episode or something, right? Mm-hmm. One of these procedural shows, and you're like, well, clearly it's one of two people, and it's probably that guy, and it's probably that guy is usually the guy. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that you're right. It was so well constructed about, like, there's legitimately, like, most of these people, like the dad, they have the whole thread on that, and I was like, I don't know, maybe the dad. I'm like, they could have said so many people the killer, and I would be like, oh, okay.
So what we need, what they needed to do is, like, Clue, they should have filmed multiple endings to this movie and, like, shown them at different theaters and whatnot, and then everybody would have had a different thing. What do you think?
That would be insane, especially with the climax of this movie being so long.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it took them like 3 weeks to film that. And they all, like, actually, it's another bit of trivia. Like, they got t-shirts that I survived scene, I think it was like scene 118.
Yeah.
I think because it was like the longest scene ever. Because in the script, it was just the same scene, because at the same place. because watching it for the first time, I was like, wow, we're like halfway through and we're at the presumably what's going to be the climax house. Mm-hmm. It just goes on and on and on in a good way, mm-hmm. but still.
The only real major complaint I'm going to have about this film is there is absolutely no way that a garage door opener would lift a person like that and crush their head like that. That's just nonsense.
Well, you saw it was being strained, you know.
Yeah, no, it's no.
Even so, it's smart though, right? They had the fake jump scare with a cat.
Yes.
And then you're like, that establishes why there's a cat door there, which establishes why she tries to crawl through it, which establishes why she kills herself that way. So
it is a really smart movie. This movie is very smart, and that's why I love it so much. It is self-aware. There's enough fake-outs. There's enough jump scares. There's enough comedy. And there's enough references to horror in general. Like, this is written by and made by people who love the genre. I know that we've got Wes Craven, who's a very, very famous name in horror. But it's written by people who clearly love the genre. Because they poke fun at the tropes and the stereotypes that you get from horror movies.
The Jamie Kennedy's there, like, talking everyone through it.
Right.
Well.
You know, the rules of the horror movie and whatnot. But, I mean, it sets a tone with this type of film, which was going to play out in the sequels as we get to them, how horror movies have evolved and whatnot. And I don't know, like, to me, that's what brings this movie over the top, is its love for the genre and its self-referential humor throughout the whole thing from start to finish.
Yeah, I think that's huge. I think whenever you're parodying something, you need to enjoy the original thing.
Mm-hmm.
That way it doesn't seem like spiteful, you know, or just lack of perspective or generic, right, or stereotypical.
Mm-hmm.
But in order to break all these rules and bend them, you have to understand them, and they definitely did.
Mm-hmm.
Because, I mean, yeah, it really is, like, so much of it is in the way it's told. Because even with, like, you know, Sydney's character, you're like, they tease it like, oh, well, they haven't seen anything like that around here since, well, you know. And they slowly reveal her backstory.
Right.
And I thought that was pretty effective. You're like, what are they talking about? And, like, her mom. Mm-hmm. And then you think Courtney Cox really is just, like that kind of just tabloid-esque person. But actually, maybe she had a point.
Yeah.
You know? And I thought that was interesting. Like, they really drew a lot of the stuff out. And it's all in, like, the how they lay it out in the presentation for you is cool. So I thought it was pretty clever as well. But so let me ask you, Brandon, because you love this film so much and you've seen it many times, I assume. Like, are they both Ghostface, like, dressed up? And
yes.
What are your
So my thought
about that.
So they're at different points. They are both Ghostface at different times. Like, you know, I don't know which one killed who at what point, right? I don't think we can know that. But I mean, like, my. It could go either way, that Skeet Ulrich's character could have had the suit on and then taken it off for that scene when he comes to Sydney's place at the beginning. But I've always interpreted that scene that the other character had it on, right? And Skeet Ulrich's character... Stu, I'm sorry, I am bad with names. So who?
Shaggy.
And who? And what's Skeet Ulrich's character's name?
Billy. Loomis.
Billy Loomis, that's right. So Shaggy and Loomis... So Shaggy was wearing the suit, and then Loomis came in through the window, right?
That's a whole other thing that they established. I like the setups and the payoffs are so good, because, like, earlier when he's stuck into, you know, as the boyfriend, he's stuck into a room, the dad's like, what's going on in there? And he can't open the door because the closet's open, and they use the same thing against the ghost face when he's in there. I'm like, that's really clever.
Yes. So. But then you get the establishment of him coming through the window, and then he comes through the window again.
Mm-hmm.
Right, and they plant the seed early enough of the doubt that that Loomis is the killer. Like, that's they get it right out of the way right at the beginning.
And you think, oh, okay, well, that's of course they're gonna frame the boyfriend, and that there's the drama, and then he turns out to actually be. I was like, oh my god, they did it, because you're running out of characters near the end. I'm like, okay, I guess it's gonna be Shaggy,
yeah,
because I haven't seen him in a while, right?
Yeah,
and wow, that was. That was a good. Well, then when she brings up the phone call thing,
mm-hmm.
like, so who did you call on your one phone call? So was that really him that had called her from jail? Though
no,
that doesn't make any sense.
It would have been Shaggy that called, right? Because the two of them together. Because I don't know how police stations work, but I'm sure his call was monitored, right? So, like,
the fact that got her thinking that way,
yes,
was interesting. Yeah.
Was enough, and then because then it plants that doubt in your mind again that it's him, and then they quote unquote kill him. right? They quote unquote kill him off, and you're like, wow, okay, that, because I'm sure that people had that doubt watching the film. This is this movie is so smart and so well written. You know, like, I don't know, I just think it's fantastic. So I assume that Shaggy made the phone call while he was in jail, right?
Because they're trading off with the voice changer. And
that's right, yeah, because you see them at the end, they both use the voice changer.
Yeah.
Right, in that final scene or whatever, right? So
who killed Rose McGowan then? You think, because Stu was her boyfriend.
I think it would have been Shaggy at the time.
You think Shaggy killed his girlfriend?
I think that his motivation on that was because... No, that wasn't his girlfriend. Oh, wait, no, okay, hold on. Okay,
you're thinking killed... Billy. Ghostface kills Rose McGowan with the garage door opener. I'm going to say that's Billy.
Yes, because...
Because she's like, are you Billy? He's like, mm-mm, he shakes his head.
Yes.
So.
And Shaggy was in the party already, right? He was
around
there. Yes, sorry, I got confused. I was thinking, what's her name at the beginning there?
Drew Barrymore.
Drew Barrymore at the beginning and her boyfriend. And I'm like, I assume that he did that murder for exactly the reason, is because she dumped him for this other guy.
Yeah, see, they plant all those seeds. Like, oh, didn't you date her? Well, yeah, but that was, I thought you dumped her. So, like, that's what makes good mysteries, when you can go back and you're like, you know what, that all makes sense. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm gonna compare this to something that actually came out around the same time. It was a graphic novel called Batman The Long Halloween. It wasn't a graphic novel, but it is now. It was over a year. And I'm pretty convinced that the writer didn't even know who the killer was. And even at the end, they're like, well, it might have been this person, might have been both of them. That's what made me think of it, because I'm like, oh, they present the solution of that story as it's two people, and maybe they were trading off and doing it, mm-hmm. but they didn't, talk about it. They just did it, independently of each other, and all worked out. I was like, no, you guys didn't know. You just didn't know, and you didn't know how to tie it together. So, anyway, the Scream does Batman The Long Halloween better than...
Than the Long Halloween did.
Than the Long Halloween did. All right, that's my hot take. But yeah, no, I thought that was really smart, because you think back to it and you're like, okay, that checks out. So yeah, and I've only seen this once for this podcast, but I'll definitely want to rewatch it and have the knowledge of who did it, because there's so many misdirects, like the police officer, the principal, mm-hmm. right? Any of the, you know, the Jamie Kennedy actually calls them both out for being the, but then he himself, being such a horror movie fan, would fit the
right
the role as well. So many of these people fit that way, and they kill, I guess they only kill people who kind of get in their way at the end, but then they really had very specific targets, right? It was the ex-girlfriend, mm-hmm. it was, you know, and her boyfriend,
mm-hmm.
and current boyfriend, so those are the two at the beginning, and then he tries to come after Sydney, mm-hmm. right? And then really, it's just coming after Sydney, and then all the people that kind of get in the way of the party. Like, you know, they try to kill Dewey and, you know, all those kinds of people. So,
yeah.
Anyway.
I mean, if you sit down and you fine-tooth comb it, a lot of it, I think, doesn't really make sense. Why does Rose McGowan's character get killed? She's not, you say she's in the way, she's not really in the way. You know, she just went off to get a beer.
No, that's true. Maybe he didn't like his... His friend's girlfriend. I don't know.
Right. And
he's look, if I'm going to kill my girlfriend, I'm going to kill his girlfriend too. Maybe that was his thinking. So yeah. I don't know.
And
the principal doesn't make any sense.
The principal doesn't make any sense either.
And that makes, but knowing that was a studio note, I'm like, okay, now I see why that's randomly in there.
Yeah.
So.
But also, that's only, to me, that's only when you sit and really think about it.
Oh, because, yeah.
You know, horror movies are deaths. They're deaths and murders, and the type of movies that this is not parodying, but showing its love for, you know, is this type of movie where a lot of people die, like slasher films, like Nightmare on Elm Street.
Well, they explain everything, too. Even at the end, they're like, okay, well, you know, because they've kidnapped her dad throughout this whole movie, mm-hmm. and they're framing her dad, with his cell phone and his car and things like that, and that's what works so well, is that their plan, they explain at the end, he killed you, he went crazy, killed all these people, he killed you, he killed himself, and then we survived, right? Mm-hmm. I'm like, man, that is exactly, people would believe that, mm-hmm. you know, yeah. Unfortunately, that's what's so scary. That's kind of the point of the movie, so Jamie Kinney is always like, just watch Prom Night, it all makes sense, man.
Have you seen Prom Night?
No, I haven't seen Prom Night, I want to see Prom Night now.
Yeah, I haven't seen them, I got a box set of the four of them, and I've missed
four of them!
Yeah.
Alright, next year on Franchise Boutique,
And a remake.
But... Side note, I miss video stores, man.
Oh, yeah.
Just seeing all those people, in a wherever, Blockbuster or wherever that was, I was like, I miss video stores. What a cool place to be.
Yeah.
But anyway, it's good stuff. All right. So, yeah, I think it was really smart. It was very funny.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of clever humor in there. A lot of just legitimately, like, that's a tough balance, you know. So this is a hard movie to, like, categorize. And I guess that's the point.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like, is it horror? Is it comedy? Is it satire? It's all of them.
Mm-hmm.
And it does them all pretty well. Like, you're genuinely, like, when he, like at the first phone conversation, when he snaps, like, don't you hang up on me again. I'm like, whoa.
Yeah.
Like, things got really serious.
Really,
all
really abruptly
because
changed
even,
tone.
Like, Drew Barrymore's like, hell yeah. Oh, you gonna date me? And she's laughing. Like, they're having a fun conversation. She thinks it's all a joke. They say, like, I want to know who I'm looking at. I'm like, oh, no.
Yeah.
And then
that is
from
such
there,
a good moment, man. The first time I watched it, I was just like, what?
So, man, yeah, Wes Craven, he knew what he was doing. And Kevin Williamson, the writer, as well.
Don't you
so.
Mean Wes Carpenter?
Wes Carpenter. That's one of these Wes Carpenter movies.
You know, like, it's fun because, like, yes, they have that. But then Wes Craven did put in, like, a couple of funny things, too. Like, I'm sure I missed a ton of them. But, like, mm-hmm. the janitor is Fred
Cougar.
Wearing this, the dirty red and green sweater,
and
you know, like, in the hat and whatnot. So, like, there's references to, like, other horror films and stuff. And, I mean, they're watching Halloween, right, during that end scene, you know.
Yeah, I was surprised they went Halloween and not Nightmare on Elm Street. Maybe they thought that was too on the nose.
I think that they wanted to get more because everybody knows that it's a Wes Craven film. And I think they wanted to get, like, all of them in there. And I think it's, you know, because, I don't know, it just, it does kind of feel weird at first. But I think now that I think about it more and more, Halloween kind of makes more sense to have that as acknowledged as well. So
yeah, and that Ghostface is more Michael Myers than anything.
Yeah.
I think we talked about it on here once, and it was the opening trivia where he's like, who was the killer in Friday the 13th?
Yes.
So like, Jason!
Have you seen the first Friday the 13th?
Oh, yeah, I know this is mom.
But have you seen it, though?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
You have seen it. Okay.
Yeah. Spoilers. And the second one where he's got a potato sack on his head.
Okay.
And the third one, he finally gets the hockey mask. Everyone thinks Jason, you know, the hockey mask, and that's not until the third one. So I love how, like, that's like the most extreme movie trivia game ever.
Yes. I would probably get that wrong, too, if I'm sitting there and my girlfriend is about to be gutted. I'd be like, Jason, you know.
That's a legitimately trick question. She's like, you tricked me, you know? So, anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Good stuff, man. I just, so for the finale, though, did you find it a satisfying conclusion?
Like, what do you mean?
Like, I guess I was hoping for some, like, intact, like, 1 year later and she's all better, but then, like, then she gets a phone call or something, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know. Because it just kind of ends with, like, hi, I'm Courtney Cox, and I'm here at the house. Let's take a walk through, right? I'm like, okay, like...
Mm-hmm.
That's fine, but maybe I was looking for an extra hook or an extra epilogue or something like that. Yeah.
A coda.
So.
I guess I'm okay with it because, you know, like, I guess looking at it now through this day and age, like, could she make that report where she's like, oh, this happened and these people killed them and whatnot? Because, you know, you got the word alleged that you have to use nowadays, right? But she, like, witnessed the events, you know? So, like, you know, would this guy be able to do, like, a defamation suit because you're not using the word alleged or whatnot in a reporter story? I don't know.
Well, they're all dead, so I guess it doesn't... Maybe their family could sue them.
Right? Yeah, I guess. So. I guess that they are all dead at that point, so...
Where is Shaggy's parents? They out of town? Like, they have this crazy party at this house.
They're in London being attacked by a werewolf.
Okay.
Yeah, an American werewolf.
American werewolf in London.
Yeah, so,
yeah.
Something like that.
Got it.
So, oh, the people that I feel worse for, though, is Drew Barrymore's parents, like, to come home and, like, see that and, like, get her on the phone.
And she was so close. She was like, Mom! I was like, oh, no, she's so close.
Oh, that's such a great moment, too. I still remember how I felt the first moment because I don't remember if I knew Drew Barrymore died. I think she did. I think I did know that the first time I saw the movie. I think that had been spoiled for me. But when she gets up there, I'm like, oh, is she going to get away and then die later in the film? It was such a shocking moment that she died that close to her parents, you know, that even the first time I watched it, I felt it was quite shocking.
Yeah, because like, it's like, oh, good, the car is here. It'll be okay. But nope, not going to be okay. So,
did you know that she died in this movie? Did you know that ahead of time? Was that spoiled
for you? I don't think so.
Yeah.
No, I mean, I'm like, oh, yeah, Drew Barrymore was in Scream. Was she in the other ones? I don't know. Like, I intentionally just stayed away from... I know Courtney Cox and Neve Campbell and all these characters. I'm curious because I'm like, do they all stay alive this whole time? We'll see. I'm very... Because I've known about Scream. I know a lot of the actors in it. but I really don't know kind of know what happens in it. So I'm like, it's good. It's like, it's, as long as I can just stay away from spoilers, as long as we do this, we'll be in good shape.
I'm looking forward to going over this series of films with you then to see how it goes. So
yeah, this is the kind of horror stuff I like better. Like, yeah, there is a little gore in here, right? But it's not like over the top, ridiculous gore. And it's kind of, it's more John Carpenter-esque than, I mean, even Wes Craven. I mean, I think Wes Craven-esque, like, you know, Nightmare on Elm Street. But you look at the first one, like, it's the sequels that really get out of control with all these, right? Yeah. So, and Wes Craven, I mean, he was, you know, he did a lot of stuff too. He directed episodes of the 80s Twilight Zone. So, you know, he was, you know, it's so ironic though. It's always the way. All these people who are so good at something, they want to go be known for something else. Yeah, they always come back. Always come back. Like Jamie Lee Curtis.
Yeah, like Jamie Lee Curtis.
So what do people know Jamie Lee Curtis for? Halloween. Like, she's been in more Halloween movies than Donald Pleasance.
Yeah.
Think about that.
I watched a documentary with her, and it's a little tangent, but she seems like such a down-to-earth person. Like, she you know, there was, like, it was a convention that she was invited to, and it, like, followed her along, and she just seemed like a truly touched person to be, like, honored to meet her fans and having a good time.
I think I've seen that, like, the 25th anniversary or something like that. Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I guess last thing I'll say, though, is, like, I really did think it was going to be the principal for a little bit. I'm like, oh, they got the Fonz. He is so, like, when he gets the mask, he's so against the mask. He's like, you're suspended. I'm cutting this off, right? I'm like, wow, that's a little overreaction. And then he's putting it on and goofing around. And then he tells the guys, like, you're going to get strung up with your intestines in a tree. I'm like, whoa, that's what the killer did at the beginning. So, if I had to, like, halfway through before he died, I was like, and in his closet, he'll have the ghost costume. Yeah. Like, there's so many ways this movie could have gone. Like, they didn't make a choose-your-own-adventure of this. Like, you're saying, like, the clue, like, you know, I really should. They ever remake this.
Multiple endings, man. Different endings, different murders.
There's a Scream TV show, right?
I'm going to check that out for the first time.
It's not connected to any of the movies, though.
Isn't it? I don't know anything about it.
I don't know.
All that I know is it's on Netflix, and I've been wanting to watch it, and I never got around to it. And I think I'm going to finally bite the bullet. And after we cover Scream 4, I think I'm going to watch it, because that's when it came out, was just in the last few years, so... But we're not going to cover it for the podcast.
All right. Yeah, no, we only do movies.
Yeah.
Not TV shows. So. Well, Brandon, I have a question for you.
Oh, do you?
I do. What is the phone call count?
Ooh, that's a good one.
This is when you hear the phone ringing and someone picks it up. Okay? It's not like, I'm going to go call 911 or something.
So there's like five in the first scene. Is that what you mean?
There are six in the first scene.
Six in the first scene. Okay. So six, seven... 12?
Oh, yeah, 11.
11, okay.
That was super close. That was good. See, you drew it on this movie pretty good. That was good. Yeah, because there's six in the first scene. There are two. Sydney gets a call from her friend, and then she gets a call from Ghostface when she's at home. She gets the call when she's at her friend's house.
Yeah.
You know? Jamie Kennedy gets the call at the party about the principal being dead. And then finally, she calls them at the end, and we're using the voice changer. So that brings you to 11.
Total. Oh, nice, so nice.
I thought it could have been Dewey at some point.
What?
I was like, I don't know. Like, I could have believed anyone.
Did you think it was Courtney Cox?
I didn't think it was. I knew for it wasn't her. They kept having them get hit in the growing area.
Yeah.
So I was like, that kind of, you know. Well, they even have a whole conversation about, like, if it could be a man or a woman.
Yeah.
Right outside. That's its own. That took its own comedic turn, right? But no, I didn't. Courtney Cox is probably the one person I was like, okay, it's not her. So anyway, there you go. 11 phone calls.
Yeah.
So even having the pop culture knowledge I have of these, even I knew the phone calls.
You knew the phone call thing.
It was a big deal.
Well, the new trailer even starts off with the ringing phone, right? Like, because it's such an iconic thing for this. The new one. Have you seen the trailer for the fifth one yet?
Yeah.
It looks good. Well, I mean, I think you're going to be surprised in the fourth one when Henry Winkler comes back and is actually the killer in the fourth one. So I think... Oh, shoot. I shouldn't have said that.
Spoilers.
So.
Hey!
He's Canadian. So Courtney Cox is Canadian, though. Or not Courtney Cox. Neve Campbell. Neve Campbell's Canadian. Okay.
Yeah, there you go. Canada. So, there's just another reason to like her for you, Brandon.
Yeah.
So. All right, Brandon, I have another question for you.
Oh, nice. Right on. I like this one.
How many rings of the phone?
Oh, definitely
would you give Scream?
Definitely my favorite scary movie is Halloween. Oh, wait a minute. No, that's not what you asked me. Yeah. I would definitely give this one 5 rings of the phone. You know, I love this movie. It even today, I'm like, man, this just so smart, so well written. I'm loving it, every minute of it. It's fun. It's quick. It's fast-paced. There's some really great long scenes in it. You know, like that opening sequence is pretty long. I didn't check the time on it, but it's probably 15 minutes long, the opening sequence with Drew Barrymore. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the end sequence is like, what did you say, 30, 40 minutes long, something like that, the whole
climax.
It's like
half the movie.
It's so good, man. This movie is original, creative, and we can't ignore the cultural impact that it had. This movie was important, and I love it. How about you?
You know, going into this, I was like, 4.5, but talking through it, like, I really can't think of any, like, true negatives about it. So I'm going to give it 5 out of 5 rings of the phone.
Nice.
As well. Because this is a really smart, well-constructed horror comedy satire movie and enjoyable. You know, I love those movies that can kind of cross all genres. You know, kind of like these are very different movies, okay? But, like, Get Out. Mm-hmm. Get Out crosses a lot of genres. That's probably, like, if you had to tell me, like, what's your favorite horror movie of all time? I'm like, well, does Get Out count? Because that would probably be mine. But that crosses a lot of genres.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so anyway, that very well done. And I'm very interested to see what comes next.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, like, I don't want to set your expectations too high, but I don't think that there's any bad movies in this series. Like, they're all good, you know? Okay. So, like, I'm not going to say they're all 5-star films, but I don't think any of these movies are bad. I don't think this genre gets tired. I don't think this franchise gets tired at all. Like, that's spoiling, I guess, for the next 4 podcasts or whatever.
So you're saying this franchise is not fatigued?
This franchise is not fatigued. Zach, okay. Do you think that this franchise is fatigued?
See, I don't know, man. See, as much as I loved this one, I was like, I don't know what you do after this, because clearly they had multiple killers and they're both dead, and so are most of the other characters.
Yeah.
So I think I have to say yes.
Ooh.
Because I don't... It's one of those trick questions again, yep, where it's like, it was great. Do I want it Back to the Future too? I mean, I guess, but so, okay. Right, I'm going to say no for now.
No for
because
now?
Because no for now.
You can
we'll
say
see
yes.
How they go.
You can say yes. It's okay to say yes.
Is it okay to say yes? I don't know.
I said
feelings.
Yes after every Blade movie.
Hmm. I'm gonna say yes.
Okay, that's fine.
For now, because I don't know. It's one of the few ones where I have no idea what's coming. I'm like, okay. But you guys, you set out to do something and you did it very well.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like you've told the story. And I just don't see how it's not going to be extremely contrived to keep this going.
Yeah.
But we'll see.
Yeah. So what I love, and what I'm actually really looking forward to the new one here, like this is just kind of looking ahead a little bit, is that like they from 1, 2, and 3 all came out pretty quickly. Like I think it was 96, 97, and 2000. They all came out relatively quickly for the first three. But the fourth one was 2011. It was 11 years, you know, and then here we are 22, another 11 years for number 5. They're not just pumping them out. I think they're waiting until they have a good idea.
Yeah, it's like Indiana
out.
Jones, Brandon.
Like Indiana Jones, I can't wait till number 5 comes out. So,
did you like Kringing in with a Crystal Skull?
I didn't hate it. I mean, it's fun. It's not a terrible movie.
We plan to talk about it, but at this rate, there might never be an Indiana Jones 5.
We might as well just jump
so
into
we'll
those
just
sometime.
Might as well do them, because those are some, that's one of the last few, like, I mean, not saying we're running out of franchises, but like movies, franchises that have like a deep, like, knowledge and affection for, you know what I'm saying? So anyway, I've one of the heavy hitters left. So Indiana Jones 5, you know, again, like they wait 20 years between the last couple, so there you go. And there's an Indiana Jones TV show, just like Scream.
Yeah, did you know that the second Indiana Jones is actually a prequel?
What? That doesn't make any sense.
I don't think we've hit that joke in a while. It's
you're saying
while
the temple, you're telling me the Temple of Doom takes place before Raiders of the Lost Ark?
It does, like a year at least.
What?
I know.
That's great.
You know how you can tell the numbers at the start?
Oh, the wow. Years. I'm gonna break that out. You know, Nick, when I do a Scream-style extreme movie trivia phone call, that's going to be the question.
What
Indiana Jones movie takes place first?
Yeah,
Raiders of the Lost Ark. I know it. Sorry.
Now, you're going to ask them, what do you say, name all the Indiana Jones movies? What if somebody says...
In chronological order.
Indiana Jones and the Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Ooh,
says
that's also a fail, because I always base the title off what we see on the screen, Brandon. You know my rules.
Okay,
so.
Sounds good.
The Son of Kong.
The Son of Kong. Excellent. Well, the Zach Moore, thank you so much for joining me today. Thank you for discussing this. Zach, where can people find you online when you're not prank calling me and trying to kill me?
Well, you can find me personally on Twitter at MoronZach. That's OOREUNZACH. Muscle host of my own podcast, Always Hold On to Smallville, where we talk about each and every episode of that Young Superman show. You can find us on Twitter at AlwaysMallville with one S. Also, I host Sasswatch, a Bigfoot multimedia podcast with Ken Tripp here at UFP Earth, and you can find us on Twitter at SasswatchPod.
And as for me, you can find me here on the network with another show called Infinite Diversity, which is all about new Star Trek. And you know what, Zach? I'm loving Season 4 of Discovery. I think it's really good. I think you should watch it.
I'm glad you love that, Brandon.
I think you should watch it.
I you know what? I'm fine.
You can also find me on Good Evening, an Alfred Hitchcock podcast, where we cover all of Hitch's films in chronological order. Thank you so much to Ken Tripp and Tony Robinson for being executive producers of the network. Thank you so much to Zach Tripp for being the creator of our wonderful theme song. And thank you so much to Casey Pettit and David Willett for being associate producers of the network and our show in particular. And yeah, be sure to check out all the other shows we have on our podcast network. You can find our show on Twitter at Franchise Fatigue. You can email us franchisefatigue@ufp.earth. Find us on Letterboxd. I keep forgetting to mention that we're on Letterboxd. You know, we put all our rankings and whatnot when we're done, and I create the lists and stuff for all the franchises that we've covered. So be sure to check us out on Letterboxd, Franchise Fatigue. And yeah, I guess that's about it. Did I forget anything?
Nope. Sounds good to me.
Sounds good. Okay. So until next time when we cover Scream 2, Scream Harder.
Cruise Control.
Scream 2, Cruise Control. That would work. That would work. You know who's in the next one?
Keanu Reeves?
Jerry O'Connell.
Oh, Sliders.
Sliders. Okay. Sliders. Until then, hello, Sydney.
I like scary movies.
This has been a production of MTMR Media Works.